Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Graw Pod. Doug Graw here today. Excited to talk with our good friend Greg Thompson. Greg, our producer extraordinaire for the Graw Pod and the Pod Wheels Network. Thank you for helping out today. You and I have both done a lot of work in the messaging, the communications world. You have also have a long history on the news world, specifically as a journalist. There's a couple of noteworthy news items in the industry this week. We're recording this on March 1st. Spring training starting to get in full swing, so I'm excited about that. But in the industry this week, we saw two of the major players, J.B. Hunt and Knight Swift, announce some transitions within their executive teams. Not here to opine on those decisions. Good for them. But noteworthy that two corporations going through those kinds of transitions. I'm curious, just first from a news perspective, Greg, what goes into a messaging plan internally and externally? If a client comes to you and says, we think we've got a change coming in the next few months or the next year or two, as a communications professional, what are you thinking about as far as the message planning internally and externally?
Well, Doug, first of all, thank you for allowing me to come back behind the curtain here and be on the microphone. It's great to be with you, and you and Gary always do deep dives into things that are very valuable, and I'm looking forward to the conversation today. To answer your question, the first thing that I do is try to get a sense of what the company's trying to accomplish, where they are, and what they want to communicate. What is the end goal here? So getting to know that, I spent 14 years at a major carrier where we did make some announcements, and it was a publicly traded company. It was a family-owned company at one time. Understanding the audience, understanding the goals are really the first things that come out. Again, not to take a real deep dive into this, but when we look at the J.B. Hunt piece with Shelley Simpson now being CEO and president, it's something that if you tracked Shelley's career, that news announcement really wasn't a surprise. But what to me was very interesting, and it gets to the topic today, is that it's very clear that J.B. Hunt has a succession plan, is working towards that, and it speaks well of their organization.
Well said. I don't have any great inside baseball knowledge on J.B. Hunt. Know of them, know a handful of folks there, and have always had good interactions with them and think highly of them. But I don't know the inner workings of J.B. Hunt or inside baseball and all that kind of stuff. But you're exactly right. It does appear that they've been pretty thoughtful and thorough over the years, not just with this transition with Shelley, but with a handful of other transitions they've had over the past 10, 15 years. They've grown and their executive team has changed over a little bit and all that kind of stuff. It appears that they're pretty thorough and good about planning for those transitions. And that kind of gets me into what I want to talk about today is that succession planning and what that looks like, what it means to a business. In trucking, we've got so many wonderful stories of either I started the business or my dad started the business or my mom started the business and so forth. But we're almost seemingly coming up on another generational change. It feels like a lot of trucking companies have a similar age and arc and so forth. And for whatever reason, we're coming up on another series of transitions. And I think it's important for companies not just to be thinking about what does this year look like, but really what do things look like 3, 5, 7 years from now if something tragic happens or if I want to retire or if I want to sell. So I'm curious, Greg, in your perspective, when you think of transitions going well, what are some characteristics that you've seen in those succession transitions?
First of all, Doug, it's so important to actually have a plan. And I think you hit on it just a moment ago when you talked about not just looking at this year. One of the issues that we have in trucking is that we get into kind of a reactionary state. Depending on the health of your company, you're chasing revenue, you're doing this, you're doing that. Planning is so important and so essential to all businesses. It's critical in trucking, yet you and Gary have talked about this so much. It's so difficult to do, to just put everything aside. And I'd like for you to talk about that for a moment, to put everything aside and actually sit down and say, we're going to take a retreat. We're going to build a succession plan. These are things that are not done overnight. These are things that are done months at a time, years at a time, and it takes a dedication to that, right?
Yeah, you're right. You have to be purposeful. You have to be thoughtful about it. And I think some folks get hung up on is the right word, but talking with folks is they might say is like, I don't see anybody on our staff that is the heir apparent. That may be a true statement, but I might be thinking to myself is, okay, you're right. There may not be someone on the staff right now today, but is there any one or any two or three that if given appropriate opportunities, if given appropriate development, if given appropriate challenges, could grow into that? Let's think for a second about the trucking company maybe that has 150 trucks or 200 trucks or something like that. And it's a 2-3-4 person kind of leadership team, but they aspire to be more of a 250, 300 truck trucking company or to really grow the logistics arm or something like that. Okay, that's great. Well, you're going to need to add to the team. And when you're kind of the head of this entity of this business, as you grow, you can't be all things to the business. You need to develop other skill sets. So don't be looking at the succession plan like, who can be me? Because there's only one you. You've got so many great things and all that kind of stuff, but you also have weaknesses. You need to be thinking about who on the team can lead this company into whatever its future looks like. And the future is not the same as the past. So it's not looking for the carbon copy of you. I think the other thing that companies do, you talked about being purposeful, being thoughtful, and setting the time aside to do this. I think people sometimes get hung up on, well, I don't want to necessarily bring in career coaches. I don't want to bring in a very detailed LinkedIn learning training program. It doesn't have to be that kind of stuff. It really can be just, I'm going to give this project to this person and I'm going to see if they can do it. And then I'm going to give them another project and I'm going to give them another project. Then I'm going to give them a little business unit, a little division maybe, see if they can run that and start to see what happens that way. There are plenty of trucking companies and companies in general who are fantastic at this. They really do a good job of ensuring that people rotate around the business and get different challenges and so forth to see if they can grow. I'd like to see more companies do that because it really can help out them now as well as in the future.
I know that you've been involved in merger and acquisition work. I know that you've been involved in actually working on succession plans. So let's talk about that. What skills are needed? What do you need to do? Let's start at the beginning. What do you need to do to build a succession plan?
Yeah. So the first thing I would do is I'd assess my business, where I'm at today, what I think a good leader for our culture, our organization looks like on whatever timeline I think I'm on. You really should look at it probably in a couple of different ways. One is like just the emergency context. If something awful and tragic happens, what would happen tomorrow? You need to have that kind of a plan, but also the, okay, I would like to look at an exit, whether it's retirement or sale or whatever the case may be, in 3, 5, 7 years. What does that plan look like? What does the business look like in that time frame? So the first thing is assess your business and your culture right then and there, and what do you think it can be in the next, call it 3, 5 years? Then you start looking at, well, what skill set does the leadership team need? Okay, now what skills does my team, do I know I have? Maybe I've got a CFO who's really good at this stuff and can fill this skill set. I've got an operations person who can fill this skill set. So I don't really need to fill those two skill sets, but I need to fill in the blanks here on this third one. So be critical of what skill sets do I need? And then the next step is, okay, how would I go about finding and developing those skill sets? What projects could I give to somebody? Could I introduce to somebody to see if they can develop or show those skills? I think that's where it starts.
So as I hear you share this, I'm thinking about what you were talking about before, about where you want to go with your company. If you're 100 trucks and you want to be 200 trucks, there's going to be a model for that because you might have to attract outside talent. I think one of the things that I'm hearing you say is you really have to be critical about where you are, who you are as a company. You have to look outside of yourself. And when I say critical, it's okay to criticize. Look at what your strengths are, but also look at your weaknesses to see what you need to do.
Whether you're in the interest or you're interested in selling or not selling, I think it is important to look at your business as if you're for sale from time to time. again, you could have no interest whatsoever in selling or being for sale. But if you periodically look at yourself like, what would someone on the outside, someone who's interested in investing in me, buying me, or just loaning me money as a bank, what are they looking for? So look at yourself that way. You might think your company is all these wonderful things, and I'm sure it is, and that's great. But you have to think to yourself, if I go away, are we still all those wonderful things? Or is everything really amount to all the decisions flow through me, all the culture set by me, all the strategy set by me? That may be great, but if I'm an investor, basically I'm like, okay, well then now I'm just looking at assets and book of business. I'm not really looking at much else, because when this person goes, a lot of the good stuff goes away with it. If you look at yourself like you're for sale, that's one of the things to look at is, if I'm for sale, is my value go up because I'm out? Does it go down because I'm out? What happens to my value if me exiting is a part of a sale?
And then I guess the follow-up question is, then what steps do you have to take to improve your value in your current situation?
This is where you get to what I would consider still to be the best business book that's ever been written. And there are plenty of good ones, and I like plenty of them, but I still think Good to Great is the best. If you only read one business book, I would read Good to Great. Good to Great, my big takeaway from it is, and there are plenty of takeaways, but my big takeaway is the organization needs to be bigger than one person. The best companies out there are bigger than one person. They have culture, they have processes, they have practices, they have policies, whatever you want to call it, that will survive beyond one person. So even if you are a relatively small company and maybe the leadership team really is one, two, three people, do you have good financial data that's reliable and timely that allows you to make business decisions? Does the leadership teach the people on the front lines how to do things, or do they just do things? Is the culture more about teaching and development and growth? Is everything built to, even if we're small today, we know that we could take this same technology, these same processes, these same people, and we could grow from there? That's what you want to be looking at. Can you answer that we can grow, that we are good despite the loss of a person? That's when you know you're a real good organization.
One of the hallmarks of the trucking industry has been family companies. There are a lot of folks that start a company and it gets passed through generations. I can think of numerous examples, and I know you can as well. Let's just talk about family companies and what you have to do within a family company. Let's say that you've got a generation that's not interested, or you've got a generation that is interested. I'm thinking about to make sure that somebody doesn't feel like they were born on third base. Get your kid to start by sweeping out the trailers and learning the business. And then I know that she's not a family member, but look at the career track of Shelley Simpson in a large carrier. Starts out in customer service. And again, going back to what you and Gary talk about, sitting in the different seats, all the different seats that she sat in, all the opportunities that she was given. And what I'm hearing from you, Doug, is the fact that finding out what people's talents are, not to be afraid to putting people out there and seeing what they can do. Again, I've thrown a lot at you. I'll let you react.
A couple of different points. The first is, I think great leaders within organizations, it's not that they are an expert in every area of the business. You don't develop someone to be an expert in every area of the business, but you do want to expose them to every area of the business so they can at least understand, okay, that perspective, that view, some of the issues, they're familiar with it. You're not necessarily saying, I need to have someone in my family, they're 14, 15 years old, and I need to make sure they know the inner details of how to repair every part of the truck. They've got to be the best dispatcher. They've got to be the best customer service person, the best salesperson, and so on. That's not what you're doing. But what you are doing is exposing them to the shops or to the maintenance world so they understand the challenges that go into there, some of the things that might work well and all that kind of stuff. Make them go out and see customers and interact with customers in some way so they have a view of, this is how customers perceive us, and on down the line. It's about that exposure. It's not about creating the best or the expert in every area. It's so that they have that viewpoint, that understanding from a wide variety of areas. I've talked to a lot of people who have wondered, maybe, why haven't I been able to grow in my career beyond a certain title or a certain this or whatever? And I think one of the things that I hear from the executive team maybe about those people is, they're really fantastic in their area, but they don't see the business from any other perspective. They only see it from that one. So to the people who are aspiring to be in those roles, that's what I would kind of say as a challenge is figure out a way to see the business from multiple angles. To the family dynamic, let's say we're beyond the kids starting in, we're talking about adults. The way I would look at that succession planning and organizing the family is a couple of different things. First is, to the extent possible, separate family from business. Have ways that your family is going to interact as family that is different from the way they interact as business. I've heard all sorts of rules of, when we're at home, we can talk about business, but only on the main floor. We can't talk about business upstairs, and we can't talk about business on vacation or whatever. We only talk business at the office, whatever. You can do those kind of rules and that kind of stuff. So do what you got to do from a family management perspective to try to separate family from business. The second, from a operational, from a management, from a succession standpoint, I would encourage family businesses to remember that businesses have three tiers of management, ownership, control, whatever you want to call it. There's the ownership piece. It's the money, and it's the are we buying or are we selling kind of conversation. And the owners are going to determine who's going to run the business. Then you've got the board, and the board is there to set strategy. Are we going to be a truckload company? Are we going to be a specialized company? Are we going to try to grow? Are we going to try to be dedicated? Are we going to go into logistics? What are we going to be? That's your board setting your strategic vision. And then you have the people running the business on a day-to-day basis. There is no rule that says that family has to be in all three layers, that family shouldn't be in all three layers. There's plenty of companies that all three of those layers are all family. There's plenty of companies where family is really only ownership and they're not at the board or they're not at the management level. But I think it's important for people to remember there are three layers, and you can separate the management of the company from the family's role as setting the overall strategy or still controlling the money. So maybe said another way, separate the money aspect from it, from the management part of it. There's all sorts of reasons to divide money, whatever ways you want to divide it. And most of that has to do with dynamics beyond the business. And they're so nuanced and all that kind of stuff. We're not going to get into that. But I would just encourage people, remember there's three layers and you can work in all three layers to figure out how to manage your business and how to manage your family.
Okay, so let's say that folks that are listening to this said, all right, I get it. I need to have a plan. They're going to work on that. So let's talk a little bit about talent. How do you identify a Shelley Simpson in your operation? Because CEOs and presidents who are effective, who have worked through the organization to have that title, they have that shine, they have the ability, they have a gift that not all of us have. How do you identify that special talent in your organization?
As far as identifying the talent, I would say two things. One is, be cautious, actually, and I know what you meant by it, but use the word the shine. I would say be a little bit cautious about being captured by the shine, because some great leaders are movers, they're shakers, they're out and about, and they've got the energy, and they got all sorts of things that just naturally exude maybe the stereotype type A leader. There's plenty of them that are fantastic at it. But also don't underestimate, there are also a lot of fantastic leaders at the CEO level and so on that are quiet, that are reserved, that are thoughtful, that are methodical about things. So don't get too enamored with some of that kind of stuff. What I would look for is, think about what a CEO needs to do on a day-to-day basis. Is yours a rah-rah culture and we're all about energy and excitement on a day-to-day basis? Great. Okay. Then that might be something you need to keep looking for. But is your culture that is, we are about the numbers on a day-to-day basis. We are about being precise in everything that we do. We are a relatively slow culture, but we are a methodical culture. Okay, who are you identifying early on that maybe has some of those characteristics? And then what I would say is just start challenging people. You don't have to challenge people with, hey, you've been here for 6 months, now we want you to run this division. But just start with little stretch projects here and there. Oh, they delivered. Nice. Let's see if we can give them another stretch project, see if they can deliver that one. And then also talk to your employees. Do your employees express interest in growth in their career path and taking on more responsibilities? If they do, feed it and see where you can go.
I'm glad that you hit on the point about the shine, because you and I, throughout our careers, we've seen folks that, wow, like dropped in from central casting or whatever. That shine dissipates pretty quickly. One of the things that great leaders do is the ability to listen. I know that when I was working with a major carrier, and it was a real culture change for me because I went from a media job into trucking. And then 3 or 4 weeks later, I'm sitting right next to vice presidents and directors. And the reason for the meeting was the company was going to affect a pay change for drivers. It was a positive, but the first thing that the senior leadership, the CEO, said in that meeting was, look, I don't have all the answers. We want to hear from you guys. That just opened up the floor, and that told me a lot about that organization at the time. And I also saw the CEO walk into trucking terminals and spend time, not just talking with drivers, but making notes and taking it back and challenging people. One of the things I think about in terms of great leaders is listening and the ability to have a vision.
Well said. I agree. I think great leaders are great listeners. Not only are they good at listening, they're good at making sure you as the speaker feel heard. And they are able to figure out what's important. They may sit down with someone for a half hour, hour, 2 hours, but they'll figure out, of everything I heard, these are the two things or the three things that are important. They can do the same thing with data. They may not be experts in all things financial or all things operations KPIs or sales KPIs or whatever, but they know what's important in them and they know how to get to what's important. And they are great at finding that balance between getting input and making sure people feel heard and feel a part of it, but also recognizing there is a time and a place where they have to be the decision maker and they can make it and they can stick with it and so on. I remember early on in my career thinking, if you were a C-level person, that must mean that you're really, really, really smart. And it does. It does mean you're smart. You do need to be smart. But I wholeheartedly believe, and maybe I should say this more specifically about the CEO owner role. The CEO owner role, so many times it really is a matter of the ability to and the willingness to make decisions, to figure out what's important quickly and make decisions on that. It doesn't mean that they're always the right decisions, but they had a way to figure out, we think these two, three, four things are important. We're going to make a judgment call. We're going to make the decision. We're going to go at it wholeheartedly. And if it turns out to be a bad one, we're going to learn from it. We're not going to make the mistake again. I think there's lots of credit that just needs to be going for that willingness to make the decision.
Doug, we started this conversation talking about headlines, and I wanted to get your thoughts on, are we in another mode of M&A, merger and acquisition? Are we going to see more headlines like these coming up, more changes the rest of the year and into 25?
Well, that's a great way for me to defer to people who are smarter than me at that stuff. There are good M&A firms out there, the Tenney Group, Blue Jay, there are others out there that are good at this stuff and that do a lot of M&A support. We do some as well, but I am hearing from them, what I'm reading and all that kind of stuff is, yes, I do believe there will be more M&A activity in 24. There are some people who will buy trucking companies, logistics companies for, hey, I want the book of business, I want the trucks, I want the trailers and the real estate, and thank you, and move on. There's plenty of good deals that occur that way. But there's also a segment of investors who are looking to what I would say more traditionally as investors. They want to invest in the business and see it grow. Part of what's going to make that business more attractive to the investor is there an executive leadership team in place that is grooming a future one, or at least understands where it may have some weaknesses and has a way to go get the skills that they don't have? I see and I believe that those companies that have not only the management team for today, but have a management team that survives beyond one person's exit or two people's exit, there is a lot of value, and I'm talking numbers, dollars, in having that. Because there's a lot of investors who are investing in the people as much as they are investing in the trucks and the book of business and the real estate. So it does make a difference to your bottom line. There's no doubt about it, to have this good succession plan in place. And what we do in that M&A world and what we've been able to do for clients is kind of take two roles. We've taken the role of hey, we think this person's good, but they're really kind of lacking in this two or three areas. Can you come in and do some coaching and help out with that person to help them get better and so forth? Yeah, we can do that direct coaching. But the other thing we've been able to do is, hey, we're getting ready for some M&A. We think there's going to be some M&A, and that is going to be a significant distraction for some of our leadership team. We need somebody, and this is where we have come in, to really be hands-on with the business on a day-to-day basis, keep it running, keep it moving, keep it flowing, while we focus on either a big purchase or a big sale. We really kind of been able to kind of take that weight off of that ownership group's shoulders by focusing on the day-to-day, running the day-to-day while they go focus on the sale and maximizing their value. And when we've done that, we've talked to the owners and said, hey, we're not here to come in and just do things our way. We are here to keep doing what you've been doing. But maybe there are one, two, three things we can try to address in here that might tick the value in a positive direction a little bit here, a little bit there.
So as we wrap this up and give you the final word, what I'm hearing from you, Doug, is that planning is so important. Looking at this stuff, getting beyond the next mile, the next load, thinking about where you want to be 5 years, 10 years, and having a plan to get there, right?
Yeah, it's exactly right. And what I would encourage people on is, yes, it's a big undertaking. It's a significant undertaking, both in terms of people development. If you're wanting to develop internally or going to start to look to maybe hire from the outside, it also can be a significant undertaking on the legal side of we need to adjust the board of directors or the bylaws, or we want to do something to kind of manage some of those family issues we talked about earlier in our session. Those things can all be significant. But I would also say is they're all manageable as long as you get started. And a lot of people kind of look at that and be like, oh man, I just don't want to deal with that. And then something does happen. All of a sudden I woke up and I'm 68 years old and I don't really want to be doing this every day anymore. So I would just say is take a small step, just start taking a small step, and you'll be amazed that once you start taking that first step, that second step's a little bit easier, and then the third step's a little bit easier and all that kind of stuff. We love helping people kind of think through these things, coach through these things, and figure out a path that preserves their culture, improves their value. We are here to make money, so improve the value of the business, but also ensures that the business is a good business for all the people involved.
Doug, once again, thank you so much for allowing me to come back behind the curtain here and throw some questions at you. It's been a great conversation. As always, you and Gary do a fabulous job on the Grow Pod and what you do through the Grow Group.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. Thanks again to all our listeners out there. Please be safe and have a great spring. We'll be back with another Grow Pod episode here in a couple of weeks.